I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from: a curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd in the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze. I'm calling in live from Los Angeles today, and I'm happy to welcome another Californian, Sue Conley of Cowgirl Creamery, to the show. How are you today, Sue?
Really good, Greg. How are you?
I'm exhausted. Last time we had you on the show in 2015, we included you in our Lost Cheese series to talk about how the drought affected your cheese production. As our listeners know, a few weeks ago, a series of wildfires killed many residents and destroyed huge areas north of San Francisco. The images we were seeing in the news were truly devastating. We'd love to hear from you, Sue, how you're doing, and if Cowgirl Creamery was at all affected by those tragic fires.
Well, we were lucky to be just south and west of the major fires. And most of the dairies are in this area that are close to the coast, so we didn't have any direct hits. However, the people who work on the dairies and for the cheesemakers, many of them had damaged homes or lost homes. None on our side, some of our friends had real really devastating losses. And
that's
many
terrible.
Of the wineries, of course.
What made these wildfires so large and devastating?
It was the wind.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The wind tunneled through the canyons, and so it was closer to a Southern California situation than anything we've ever seen here.
Wow.
And this fire also started in 6 or 8 places, so they couldn't track where it was going. And the wind was about 60 to 80 miles an hour, so it was like a torch. So we're lucky that it didn't come this way. You know, it was the will of the wind.
That's the thing about it, about fires, those large fires, is that they don't discriminate, you know? It's just that you're just at the mercy of nature. It's terrible, but that's what lets us know, for better or worse, just how small we are in terms of, you know, what we're able to affect in our environment. Have other food producers been affected that you know of?
Yes, and last night we participated in a fundraiser that was called Chef's Giving, and it was put on by the chefs of San Francisco and ended with a gala in the Ferry Building where our Cowgirl Creamery cheese shop is located.
Yeah.
And there were 60 wineries there sampling wine, and we had 12 cheesemakers each bringing three different cheeses. And everybody, there were restaurants from the Ferry Building and the neighborhood that were just getting together to try to raise money, not for the wineries per se, but for the workers that were so affected both in housing and in job loss. So, you know, the restaurant, the whole tourist industry up there has been impacted. So many people lost their homes, but many more lost their work. And so this fundraiser, and they've had some musical concerts at the stadium, the baseball stadium, that raised a lot. But, you know, this is the worry. I mean, how can people stay here? We've lost 5,000 homes, and already we had a shortage of housing.
Yeah, that's the effect. I mean, I'm here in Los Angeles, working for Eataly. We just opened this massive store, and it's the way the state is set up. The vastness of California that I don't deal with on the East Coast. It's difficult to get people to drive in anyway to come and work in the city. It's just it's tough without those sort of obstacles. We've had difficulty finding enough people to run our store. I mean, we have a very large store. But it's a dearth of people. I interviewed a couple weeks ago, I had Lisa Hall from Saxon Creamery on the show, and we talked about how the Wisconsin cheesemakers came together to support hurricane victims. And you know, I know there's been a lot of support from the cheese community in California, as you just have told me. And what she was saying is really some of the same parallels. Down there, the businesses may have survived physically, but the people who work at them, that most important resource is what gets really shorted when things like this happen. What are the next steps for you guys to deal with that impending labor crisis?
Well, my personal focus is on housing and how we're going to increase inventory, because I was thinking about that even before this tragedy. And it really is going to have to come from our politicians and our county and state government to get this thing going. We have the same issue on farms. You know, we're in Point Reyes, for instance.
Yeah.
There's just not affordable housing, so people are driving for an hour or two to get to work. And, you know, though we pay, you know, at the top of the scale, it's not enough. So,
no, it is not. It's the cost of living is high. That's the exact problem that we're having at Eataly. Is exactly that. You're the people who you're asking to come work for you are driving 1 to 2 hours. They're being paid a wage that's not even, and we're not cheap. We will pay people to work for us. However, it's just, I think that the pay scale of almost every retail, specialized food retail person is way out of whack. If people who run shops like yours and ours want a level of dedication and quality from employees, you have to pay them a certain amount of money so that their living situation is at least stable. You know, their quality of life, spending 8 hours at work and 5 hours on the road to get there is just, that's not going to work for anybody. You know what I mean?
No,
it's not feasible. And I face that pretty much every day where I work, and just as a person who manages retail. What's next? Are there any other events, or any other large events to raise any more money? Are you guys putting that together?
That's probably it for the year. That one was huge. And now it's Christmas. But this is a rebuilding that will take 10 years. So we'll keep at it, but don't have any plans for the immediate future.
Right. I'm sure not. Well, we're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Sue about the wildfires in Northern California. And I want to catch up with her on some other Cowgirl Creamery stuff. So stay with us for a tiny bit.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirsois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here talking with Sue Conley of Cowgirl Creamery about the wildfires in Northern California and how the cheese community has helped. On this part of the episode, I'd like to catch up on how Cowgirl has changed, how things have changed for you since we last spoke. When we spoke in 2015, it was the third year in a row of drought in California. Sue, have there been any changes in regulations around water usage since that time?
Well, it's interesting because last year we had a record-setting rainfall, and
yeah.
So all the conservation rules were relaxed immediately.
What? Come on!
But we are still we're still saving water because, you know, we basically have an arid climate, and we're going to have more water shortages moving forward. We did build a new creamery since I talked to you, and we just started producing there about a month ago, and we have all kinds of water-saving processes in place.
That's fantastic. We had Albert Strauss, who's your primary milk producer, on the show to talk about their efforts to keep their company and processes sustainable. Strauss Family Creamery is an amazing and innovative company. when you talk about those water safety methods, do you work with them at all to implement your own sustainable processes?
Well, we have breakfast once a week, Albert and myself, and we talk about these things and exchange resources and ideas, definitely. And, you know, it's never where we want it to be because we're both so small that they don't make the technology is for much larger facilities and processors. So, you know, Albert is kind of a genius at putting together, you know, off-the-shelf technology that we can use in our place.
Really?
He does really great things at the dairy. You know,
he's
got his methane digester that powers the whole ranch.
Yeah, I love that. I love the poop truck is amazing. What he told me about, you know, like that's just brilliant. I really enjoyed talking to Albert. The quality of the milk there, is just fantastic. When we were looking around for dairies, it was really different to be out here looking for fluid milk as opposed to the Northeast, where there's a dairy every 20 feet in New England. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just such a different thing. So the company was like, well, you only found a certain amount of producers, and then I was working with Emily Acosta and Patricia Katowska on that project a little bit. They were doing most of the hard work, and I was just telling them to do more of it. But they scoured the countryside. It's just a different scene out here for that. I mean, would you agree with that?
Well, there's been a lot of consolidation, and I think, you know, Wisconsin and Vermont still maintain small dairies, and they pay premium price for cheese making and ice cream making. Wisconsin still has a lot of very small dairies, and through Organic Valley, they've been able to increase their revenue by certifying organic. California just has bigger dairies, and they become very consolidated in the Central Valley. But in our area and Northern California, we've been able to maintain smaller dairies. But by that, I mean, you know, 200 to 300 head.
Right.
In Wisconsin,
right,
they're more like 50 to 150. So they're Strauss's are just a fantastic model because they are processors. So they buy from 8 family dairies and pay premium. And we pay Strauss premium pricing to get that quality and the certified organic standards.
What's the root cause of the larger dairies? Why does the smaller ones exist? Does it have to do just with how the land is and how the climate is? But it's really arable farmland in New England. It's almost like, you know, it rains there all the time. It's moist. There's a lot of green stuff up there. Is that really it? It's just a shortage of pasture? Or
no, there's great pasture here.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And in the Central Valley, it's irrigated pasture. So, you know, it's a prime growing area, and it's really easy to increase your herd. You know, in New England and Wisconsin, you have the stress of winter and the stress of summer. And the cows are pretty relaxed all the time up here.
Everybody's pretty relaxed all the time out here. I am always like a raging East Coaster. They can hear me like 20 blocks away when I walk up. It's very, very funny. It's cool. I really loved working with Albert. What's that?
The cows are like that too, right?
Yeah.
They're not too hot or too cold, and they're just chill. So, we have great pasture, too. We don't have a lot of water from rain because it doesn't rain in the summer. But most of the growing areas are irrigated, not Point Reyes. You know, Point Reyes is dry all summer and there's not a lot of water. But as you said, Albert's figured out ways to nurture the soil and, you know, take care of the land so that the pasture's growing about 8 months out of the year.
That's brilliant. I was pushing on him a little bit. Not pushing, but I was like, I'm wondering if he was going to take any of those practices national or try to influence. Anytime I talk to someone like that, if you guys were causality is part of your mission, I always wonder, you can just get everybody on board somehow to do that because that's the way it's going to be. Like things like these wildfires, I have to believe are a product of the climate in a changing world. Would you agree on that? That's
definitely
why they made it so far up north, or is it just a freak thing that happened?
No, I think it's climate change. I mean, I think, you know, it's just much more fierce than anything we've ever seen. And I think we have to prepare for more.
Right. If you use methods, or if you're used to using less resources to do large volume, then someone like his dairy and through it, people like yourself who are always conscious of conservation and the land, people have to buy into those. I mean, do you get pushback on that a lot? Do people in the dairy industry want to do that? Do you think that they realize how fragile that the ecosystem is and the rapid change that it's going through?
I do think that is the case in our area, and we've had some amazing programs through our Marin Agricultural Land Trust and Sonoma Land Trust for carbon sequestration. You know, where they've proven that pasture land can be an effective carbon sink, just as effective as a forest, if a small amount of compost is added to the pasture just once. It's just on like an inch of compost once will replenish that soil and capture carbon. So, you know, dairies can be the answer. They're given a bad rap by some environmentalists, but if you know,
is that for methane production, or is it just not reusing?
It takes in nitrogen out of the air, so it cleans the air.
Right.
So anyway, you know, irritated that some environmentalists just want the dairies to go away because they tend to be polluting if they're not managed properly. But they are the answer to some environmental issues. You'd never want to cut down a forest or a rainforest to make pasture land for hamburger. But if everything is in balance and the land is best suited for pasture, which is the case in our area, then it's the best food, the most efficient food to produce. So I'm really proud to be part of that agricultural, you know, animal husbandry part of our food system.
Yeah, you should be. I have one last question for you. Since we last spoke, you consolidated your business. You sold it to Emmy, and I was wondering if that was going well for you. If you were happy with the results of that purchase, and you feel like that the Cowgill Creamery is in good hands for the future.
Yeah, we're all pretty happy with the situation. They've been able to fund a new creamery for us and also help us design it. So we're still we have our own management team, and most of us have been with it for 10 years or more. Maureen and Eric in cheesemaking, and Deborah in sales.
Yeah.
And So we're all maintaining our same positions, but we're going to be able to make more cheese and experiment with new kinds of cheese. So that's it's very nerve-wracking right now because we're learning how to work everything. You know, everything's new, but it should be pretty exciting coming up. I know you're waiting for our cottage cheese.
Yeah, I am. I am very patiently, I might add.
It's only been 3 years.
I'm just joking. That's awesome. I'm glad that things are going well through that. I always get concerned. I feel like, my friends, I bought cheese from you guys forever, and I love you. So I always want to make sure that things remain the same. You know what I mean? For me, it's a... You guys have wonderful cheese made with really high quality milk, and you're great folks. I always am happy to buy stuff from you and put it in our shop at Eataly LA. Yeah, and on that note, I would say it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Sue. I really appreciate you letting us in, giving us some insight in the dairy industry at large, and also on those terrible wildfires and how the cheese community has come together to help people out. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Sue, again, for coming on. And stay tuned next week for more Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.